guess it would be nice if I could touch your body. I know not everybody has got a body like me, but I gotta think twice before I give my heart away. And I know all them games you play, 'cause I play them too. Oh, but I need some time off from that emotion. Time to pick my heart up off the floor.
You're back with Jeremy and Joe, broadcasting live from inside the Huntington Bank Studios.
On ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
Is there ever a White Boy Wednesday that goes by where Brian doesn't play Limp Bizkit?
Literally everyone until now. This is
Brian
the first time I played Limp Bizkit.
First time?
This is the first time I played Limp Bizkit.
This might be my favorite Limp Bizkit song, though. Although I don't think it's as good as the original.
Oh, yeah, George Michael's, I agree.
I'll go the George Michael one over this one.
I agree.
It's a good remake. It's a good remake, but I just prefer the original.
Yeah, the original
like
is
how,
better.
It's kind of like the Billie Jean one. Like, I prefer the Michael Jackson one, but the remake's pretty good.
You talking about Weezer's remake?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
The other who was the band that did the remake of Toto's Africa?
Also Weezer.
Yeah, Weezer.
Was Weezer too?
Yeah,
did
Weezer
they do anything
did,
original?
Weezer did a cover album.
No, I'm thinking Alien Ant Farm.
Oh, Alien Ant Farm did True Criminal.
Smooth Criminal.
Smooth Criminal by
right,
Michael
that's
Jackson.
Right, that's right. That's the one I was thinking of. That one's a really good cover too, not as good as the original. Africa, really good cover, not as good as the original, but still very good, you know?
I think I like the other Smooth Criminal better.
You like the Alien Ant Farm?
I think I like the Alien Ant Farm better. It's really good.
It is really good. I mean, it's the king of pop.
I know, but it's...
Are you guys going to see the movie?
Probably not. I'll wait till it comes out. It's also like it's family-controlled media. So, like, there's nothing bad in it. Like, so it doesn't tell the real story, it feels
yeah,
like to
know.
Me. Like, if you're, it's like, someone said it stops before, like, the trial. Which, like, that to me is, like, that doesn't tell the whole story.
I drove by his house where he died in Beverly Hills.
Really?
Yeah, I did.
Intentionally?
Yeah, we did, a tour of, like, celebrities' homes. It felt very paparazzi of us, but it was pretty cool.
Did you go to
see, like, areas.
Did you go to OJ's house?
No.
Oh.
No, didn't do that. Oh, heck no. What is this? This sounds fire on mute. I don't think you muted it. I'd throw BS flag. BS flag. I don't think you actually muted it. Just me.
Agreed.
I'm just me. I don't think you muted it. Y'all show is the greatest ever. Solid takes. Peace emoji. Don't hit us with that stuff. Ejecting textures, the best bit you've ever had.
Bring back
who said it in my life is complete. Come on.
I think we got to eject that one that said that nice thing about the show.
No, I think he's trying to get ejected, and I'm on to him.
Well, because his previous text was, y'all's takes are pathetic today.
Yeah, but he's trying to get ejected. He's doing everything under the sun to get ejected. He's throwing the kitchen sink at us to try to get ejected.
Okay.
He's trying to get an ejection, and we don't hand out ejections all willy-nilly.
You're right.
I have the record for back-to-back days with ejections last week. Congratulations. I'm proud of you. If you never get any further than this, that's okay. But that's good. No one bring up RBIs, dangerous times. I mean, you're foolish if you're arguing. You're arguing fact if you do that. Mm-hmm. Why would you argue fact? All right, Chandler Rome. Chandler Rome would put RBIs. Go look at Chandler Rome whenever he talks about multiple RBIs. He puts RBIs. You know why he does that? Because he's a reputable journalist. He's a journalist who knows about AP style and follows AP style because he respects AP style. He respects rules. But he's bad at takes. And he's a fearmonger, Joe. He's at it again today.
He is.
He's at it again today. I thought you were going to say something. No. So anyways, here's what he wrote in his article today. A few of these are some fear-mongering. Some of them are not. We'll begin with this one. If Houston opens the season with both players on its roster, talking about Walker and Isak Paredes, and all the other infielders are healthy, conversations surrounding each day's lineup decisions will be insistent. Playing Walker and Paredes together will come at the expense of either the face of the franchise, Altuve, or the team's most feared hitter, Yordan. Okay. This one's probably pretty fair. Now, don't we sit here and argue about lineup decisions every single day anyways?
Yes.
Like, that happens anyways. Will they be more emphasized because of the current structure of the offense and the roster? Okay, I'll give you that. But that's talked about all the time anyways. And then also the end of it. It'll come at the expense of Altuve and Yordan is just kind of ignoring some plans that I've set. You don't have to come at the expense of Altuve and Yordan. You can play them all over the field. You can get everybody days off. And you know what else they've talked about? They've talked about getting guys days off because they don't want to get them injured. Mm-hmm. All right. The next one. Questions are obvious, and discourse will seep into the clubhouse regardless of what players may say publicly. So now Fearmonger Rome is saying that there's for sure going to be discourse. There's for sure going to be discourse. There is not a solution that exists. Discourse will seep into the clubhouse. How can you tell me without any shadow of a doubt that there is going to be discourse that's going to seep into the clubhouse? How can you say that for sure?
Yeah, the only thing I'm starting to wonder. We talked the other day about, you mentioned how it seems like he's very like player friendly.
You think so?
So part of me is starting to wonder if there has been a conversation had behind the scenes that's not on the record with the player on the Astros that is worried about their role with their team, and it is heavily influencing all of this. Like, it's the only thing at this point that, like, because I think there are lots of logical explanations for. Joe Espada said the other day he thinks it's important that players know exactly what their roles are, which means they're going to. But part of me just wonders, like, going back to what Chandler wrote or what he said on his podcast about Isak Paredes going into arbitration, which is now no longer an issue because he has the club option for next year, is that maybe there's some kind of, like, behind the scenes, I don't like the way this is trending for me, and it's influencing him. It's like the only like logical thing I can think of why he seems to be so concerned about how this surplus is going to play out.
That is fascinating, Joe. That is some good stuff there, man.
Thanks. So you agree with me?
I don't know that I agree with you, but I would say it's plausible. And what's also interesting about this specific thing, though, is because as you said that, like I have recall to reading this article, and the article brings up a quote that Christian Walker said last year. He said that he expects to play every day.
Yeah.
I think he was asked about like his struggles and stuff. He's like, well, I expect to play every day. So I was like, whenever you were talking, it hit me on that quote. So maybe his dude is Walker.
That's what I'm kind of wondering. Like,
and Walker's a little worried that Isak might be cutting into his playing time.
Yeah. And then like, and
now he hasn't said that.
No,
this is us reading between the lines.
Yeah. We're kind of making some assumptions here, but it feels like there's more to this than just take Joe Espada and Dana Brown for every word they take as gospel when they contradict themselves all the time.
Right. That's kind of where I'm at, too. Because I just pulled up the article. Last September, after being benched for a crucial September game against the Mariners, Walker said, quote, I expect to play every day. Maybe Walker's his guy. Maybe that's where he's talking about things seeping into the clubhouse.
I mean, Pena and Correa
we're jumping to conclusions. This is totally a theory. This isn't a fact.
Yeah, but like Pena and Correa have also made similar comments, you know, about wanting to play every single day and be out there. Now, I think Correa, you have to have a conversation with him specifically and be like, hey, we're going to protect you from yourself a little bit.
Yeah, I think Correa is okay with days off, though.
Yeah.
Like, Correa has talked about limiting, you know, the injuries and doing things like that. And Pena should be playing just about every day.
For sure.
154 games for Pena is just what he should be doing.
Yeah. Like, it's going to be
built like me.
I think like they can solve this as long as they communicate well with the players. And like,
I think it's easily solvable unless there's a player that gets disgruntled, and maybe it's Walker who expects to play every day.
Maybe.
Scenarios exist in which both Walker and Paredes can coexist on the roster. A spot could be more flexible with the designated hitter spot in his lineup. Altuve could play more in left field, opening second base for Paredes. Okay, well, here's where I'm going to tip my cap to him. Is like he's finally suggesting a scenario that does exist. I planted this scenario a month and a half ago where it could work. Because it can work. There's a very simple path for it to work. If all guys stay healthy and productive, it still can work. So this is the first time that I've actually seen Fearmonger Rome address that. But in the same breath, he says both scenarios would contradict Espada's comments throughout the offseason, including a reiteration on Tuesday that, quote, Yordan, I would like to give him most of his at-bats as a DH, and I'll do everything in my power to keep him in the DH spot. That in itself, Joe, is fearmongering. You know why that's fearmongering? Because Chandler's not telling the whole story on the exact quote that Espada said yesterday. And we'll hear that quote on the other side. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. Jeremy and Joe, ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2. First a moment on HRP, human resources and payroll. They are the best. It's Cougar owned by Mike Holly, and that's not why I'm saying that HRP is the best, but it certainly helps. Cougar owned by Mike Holly used to protect a Heisman Trophy winner. Now he wants to protect you and your business. Business owners, let HRP help you. They can help you in HR compliance, benefits administration, payroll, onboarding. They can help in one of those areas. They can help in all of those areas. No boxes with HRP. You're not reading off a menu. It doesn't matter how small, how big the task, HRP completely customizes a plan for what you and your business needs. A great ally to have in your corner. They're always staying up to date with what's going on in the business sector. They relay that information to you. You don't have time to keep up with all of that. HRP is going to do it for you, though. You have a problem, you have an issue, you want to take a little bit off your plate, a lot off your plate, anywhere in between, HRP is going to find a way to help. They do in a way that's unique. Technology meets service. They have the best technology in the game, but it's that service that is top shelf. Guaranteed fulfillment. You'll never talk to a stranger. You'll always talk to someone who knows you, knows your business needs. Give them a call, 281-880-6525. Let HRP customize a plan for you, 281-880-6525, or check them out on the World Wide Web at HRP.net. That's HRP.net.
Houston's independent voice for sports, ESPN 97.5.
Amarillo by morning, up from San Antonio.
This is Jeremy and Joe
on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
It's White Boy Wednesday, and this is The King. Oh, I love this song. Good call, Brian. 713-780-ESPN. I'm going to be dipping out here in about 10 minutes. Boys will take you the rest of the way. They're dipping out early, too, though, at 5:30.
We are.
A little Aggie basketball. Power dribble. Junkie, don't we have Rockets and U of H basketball going
Junkie?
On? Is there anything other than Astros baseball that we can talk about in February? Hit us with your U of H question, 713-780-ESPN. Joe has three takeaways from every single U of H basketball game. Brian does as well. And I'm always happy to talk U of H basketball. Hit us with it, 713-780-3776. I personally like to react. Preview radio is not that exciting to me. Kind of hate preview radio. But we're here for you. Why are y'all not talking about the Rockets and not being active during the trade deadline? Everyone's making moves but Houston. We talked about it for an hour and we got into a fight. Why does the Astros flagship embrace Chandler Rome? He's obviously an Astro hater. Probably because he has good information.
I don't think he's a hater.
I think he's a fearmonger. I don't think he hates the Astros. I think he's a little bit of a fearmonger, like any journalist, likes sensationalism a little bit, likes to, you know, stir it up a little bit. Like, I mean, he goes after them, obviously. Like, goes after their injuries. Which, I mean, like, is that going after? Is it him being a journalist? You know, I think his perspective of things are a little bit more on the aggressive side than others. You know, like, I think Chandler Rome's a little bit more aggressive than Kawahara or McTaggart.
Yeah, for sure.
But it probably because he gives you a different opinion, I would say. Like, yeah. I mean, I think he's a really good journalist. I think he's a great journalist.
Yeah, I really like Chandler Post when he got to The Athletic, is how I'll phrase it.
Yeah.
So I don't get angry DMs again.
Who'd you get an angry DM from?
A Chronicle writer.
For what?
For saying that Chandler was much better when he actually got to write about real stories when he got to The Athletic.
Who was the hater? Greg Rajon?
Yep. He got mad.
Tracks.
He didn't DM me. He DM'd Paul.
I knew it.
Leave Joe George.
He DMs me from time to time, too. Blasphemy on this remix. That's a good call. Why'd you play the remix there, Brian?
That was the first one that came up. It was the music video, so I thought I didn't think it'd be a remix.
Yeah, I don't love the remix. That's a good call on that one. So the fearmonger in Rome here. We said both scenarios would contradict Spada's comments throughout the offseason, including a reiteration on Tuesday that Yordan would like – Spada saying, Yordan, I would like to give him most of his at-bats as a DH, and I'll do everything in my power to keep him in the DH spot. The issue that I take with this, Joe – is he completely ignores and omits 18 seconds of Joe Espada saying he's going to play some left field. Take a listen.
Yordan, I would like to give him most of his at-bats as a DH, and I will
do all everything in my power to keep him in that DH spot. He will get some opportunities in left field to keep that DH spot open for all their players.
It was in the same soundbite.
Yeah.
Why did he stop the quote? That was in the same thought, the same words, the same answer. Why did he all of a sudden, again, the quote, Brian, cue it up again. The quote that Rome uses from Espada, Yordan, I would like to give him most of his at-bats as a DH, and I will do everything in my power to keep him in the DH spot, which you hear. But in the same breath, take a listen.
Yordan, I would like to give him most of his at-bats as a DH, and I will do all everything in my power to keep him in that DH spot. He will get some opportunities in left field to keep that DH spot open for all their players.
Why didn't he put that in the quote?
Yeah, I don't, because it's like, that to me, like, is like a clear hint of like a sharing of positions in the everyday lineup. Is that like things are going to move around because he wants it to mostly be Yordan at DH, but like he can't do everything. He can only control what he can control.
It's a misrepresentation of the truth.
Yeah.
The quote is a misrepresentation of the truth. It's selectively cut. He selectively doesn't finish the quote. Why? Because I think Chandler's fear-mongering the idea that the Astros have a problem with their roster construction. That's the narrative he is spinning, is that their roster construction stinks and that there's an infield surplus and it's poorly constructed. So if you put the last sentence in there, we're like, yeah, Yordan's going to play some left. What does that do whenever Yordan plays some left? It opens up the DH spot. Why wasn't that put in there?
I don't know.
Fear-mongering! Yeah. Fear-mongering. I'm not going crazy here. I'm not taking crazy pills. It's fear-mongering. Dana Brown had this to say, courtesy of McTaggart, and they're all out there. McTaggart's out there. Rome's out there, all standing side by side, shoulder to shoulder. Kawahara's out there. Flagship's out there. Kunkel's out there. I mean, this stuff's all out there. Dana Brown literally said this. This was courtesy of McTaggart, because McTaggart's the one that has it. I feel like there's enough playing time in the DH lot and the ability to move some guys around, whether it's giving Altuve a few games and left, or DHing Isak some and allowing Walker to be at first, which could open up second base for Isak. You're going to have to rest Correa at times. Could play Paredes at third. Pena's going to need rest. Could play Correa at short. But Paredes at third. We have some moving parts, but I think the depth is going to create some flexibility for the manager. Why are we ignoring that stuff, Chandler?
Yeah, because it's like that. It's that. That kind of goes into like what your plan. That almost like honestly is your plan. I think the only thing that's different is you said you didn't think Correa would play short much.
I didn't.
Right?
Yeah, this one kind of surprised me that he said that. Yeah.
Yeah, because Correa's been pretty adamant that he wants to be at third base. Like, and I personally expect Correa to be at third unless Pena goes down with an injury, and then we'll see the change. But because Nick Allen has to play.
Well, he doesn't have to.
Occasionally.
No, he doesn't have to. He doesn't have to get starts. I mean, Nick Allen's not on this team, so you have to start him.
He can play Nick once Allen, every 20 days.
Yeah, no, I mean, I would start him at short the 8 games that I'm giving Jeremy Pena off in a realistic world. I personally wouldn't play Correa at short unless there's an IL stint. If I'm getting Pena a day off once every 20 games, and I'm just putting Nick the Stick Allen out there and letting him play short once every 20 games. But I do think Nick Allen's going to play. I think he's going to be a late inning defensive replacement at second base.
Yeah, I think so too. Like whether Paredes or Altuve's out there.
Yeah, it's just weird. Like, the spin of this is bizarre to me.
Yeah.
And I see right through it. I see right through it. Because, like, the beat reporters have a different perspective. They have different messaging. They have different ways of putting their spin on things. You know, McTaggart and Kawahara, I think, are both fair. Maybe a little bit of an Astros lens. Rome is like, he's stirring it up. He's selectively not finishing a guy's comment with his quotes in order to stir it up.
Those clicks must be good, man.
Like, we literally, we played the quote from Joe Espada that in the same breath, he says Yordan's going to get some starts in left, that he refused to put in the quote. It's in the same breath. Espada didn't even breathe between starting the quote in Chandler Rome's article, in his sentence, into that next sentence. It's bizarre to me. Yeah. And then the last thing that he wrote that's a bit fear-mongering to me, a significant injury to one of the other infielders is the most straightforward way to clear the surplus, but Houston shouldn't construct its roster anticipating such a fate. I think that is flawed logic. I think that is very dumb. Why should you not have a deep roster in case there is injury? What happens in sports? injuries. Are all these dudes going to play 162 games and be Iron Men? No, especially with who you have.
Yeah, see,
Altuve's aging, his missed games. Yordan Alvarez, even though Chandler Rome tried to say he's not injury prone because he took out two of the 5 years where he's been injury prone, is injury prone. Christian Walker's old and was unproductive last year. Isak's hamstring, who knows where it's at? He was needed surgery, didn't have surgery. Like, that's fearful. Even Jeremy Pena, who's the most Iron Man of them all, missed games last year and had he only had the one IL stint, but didn't finish the season because of the oblique. Carlos Correa's had tons of injuries. So if you have all these dudes who have had injury concerns in their career, why wouldn't you build your roster with the idea they're going to get hurt? Because you know what's going to happen inevitably? They're going to get hurt.
Yeah.
That happens in sport.
This is actually the one thing from the article that really shocked me that he wrote. Because Chandler's been on, has really pushed against the Astros' plan the last two seasons of their rotation. That they didn't bring enough depth in as all these injuries have transpired throughout the season. And he's gone back to the offseason multiple times in articles and on Twitter about how the Astros just did not add enough depth. Like, it's the same thing. It's just on the infield versus your pitching staff. So I was surprised by this. And frankly, I just strongly disagree because, as you pointed out, none of these guys stay healthy. Like, you have older players that you're relying on at third, second, and first. You have injury-prone guys at third, short, and left field, or DH. Like, you have a ton of guys that have, huge red flags of not making it through a majority of this season. Having that Paredes blanket.
Yeah.
It might be the reason why the Astros do or do not make the playoffs. And, the worst thing that can happen for the Astros is, if they move Paredes and then Correa gets hurt, then at the deadline, they're trading for another third baseman when they could have just had the third baseman on the roster.
And you know what else you can do if all of those guys are healthy and productive?
Play them.
You can still squeeze them in the lineup. This isn't that hard. It's clown take after clown take after clown take. And it's fear-mongering. The quote is the biggest fear-mongering thing that exists. He is selectively not putting the whole thought because of the narrative that he is spinning. That's kind of disgusting to me. We're not going to say that Yordan plays. Spada literally said Yordan's going to play some games in left field. Chandler didn't put that. Why not?
Only Chandler knows.
Didn't you do that?
He's fear-mongering.
Someone said, ask him on Twitter. I'm not dealing with that guy. I'm not dealing with that clown. 713-780-ESPN. Another junkie. Is Correa coming back? Yeah, Correa's under contract. Brandon, I'm always leaving work early. Must be nice. Yeah, I'm just going to work more. I'm leaving work to go work. Who cooks? But I am leaving. I'm out of here. The boys are going to take you the rest of the way. Roger Goodell says replay officials may be allowed to start adding flags. Is this a good idea? Hopefully they get the BS flag, though. The little red BS flag. 713-780-3776. Jeremy and Joe. No more Jeremy. More of Joe and more of Brian on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2. Before I go, though, it's always important to say what you mean last. Save the best for last. And I'm saving Underdog for last. Football's biggest game is right around the corner. And you can get in on all the action with Underdog right now in Texas. Not on Underdog yet? You're in luck. New customers score $75 in fantasy bonus entries when you make your first $5 fantasy entry. You're probably going to go through the drive-thru and spend twice that. But don't do that. That's a bad choice. You know what's a good choice? Spending half of that $5 on your first fantasy entry on Underdog when you sign up. Use promo code KILLERB. And then they're going to give you $75 in fantasy bonus entries. You're going to turn that drive-through meal, half of it, into $80 in fantasy entries. Branham math. Playing Underdog is easy. Just head to the app, make picks on if a player will go higher or lower on a bunch of different stats, TDs, rushing yards, passing yards, receptions, you know the game. And if you get them right, you can win up to 5,000 times your cash. There's always new promos dropping daily in the app. So if you like making picks and winning money, who doesn't, then Underdog is the best place for the big game. They got a big reveal going on right now, one of their promos. It's awesome. NFL Boost Builder going on right now. What are you waiting for? We've been looking at receiving yard picks today. Let's look at the tight ends. Who doesn't love a tight end? Hunter Henry, 39.5 receiving yards. I kind of like the higher there for Hunter Henry. How about AJ Barner, 24.5? One big catch, he's there. I think I like both tight ends here. The higher on both of them. You know ball, go prove it. What are you waiting for? Download the Underdog app right now. Use promo code KILLERB to score $75 in fantasy bonus entries when you play your first $5 on fantasy. Promo code KILLERB, K-I Pillerb, Underdog. Make picks, win money.
Must be 18 or older and present in Texas. Terms apply. See assets.underdogfantasy.com/web/play and get terms_DFS_.html for details. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit ncpgambling.org.
ESPN.
97.5. You're back with Jeremy and Joe, broadcasting live from inside the Huntington Bank Studios
on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
All right, Joe and Brian here with you for the next hour. We'll sign off at 5:30 for Texas A&M basketball. We're going to talk about the Roger Goodell press conference that he held, as he does every single Monday of Super Bowl week, in just a second. But Brian, I saw the Athletic. They always do these player polls. And I feel like a lot of times, like, there's always like one or two questions that I find interesting for each sport. And they did their NHL one, okay? And the question is, what should be the next city or state to get a team?
Okay, sure.
Where do you think Houston came in? 118 players voted in this poll.
I think I have to, well, I can't recuse myself because it's only me and you, but I saw this already.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So they're number one, right?
Yeah, they're number one. Yeah. So it's Houston 1, Quebec City 2, Arizona 3, Atlanta 4, which they shouldn't get a team because that'd be their third team.
Arizona too, like, they already failed.
Yeah, I mean, that's an ownership problem, more or less. But like, the problem is like that former owner gets like first right of refusal on a team. So like, he could also just buy a team and let it be a disaster again. Which, if you didn't know, they were playing at a arena that was similar size to the Fertitta Center.
Yeah,
last year.
I couldn't remember the exact number. I thought I heard it was like 5,000 people or something like that. It's like playing at a Reliant Arena, basically.
Yeah, and then Austin comes in fifth, which I thought was interesting. Only four votes of the 118. So, but Houston gets 48 votes. I just find it interesting because the follow-up question to this was how big is too big? And it looks like the most votes were for 35 teams, which they're at, 32 right now. So it's kind of like going, adding two more teams is okay. Like, it seems okay to them.
I mean, I don't follow hockey as close as you do or as close as I used to. So I can't speak to the overall health of the league, but I think, honestly, 32 is already probably too many. I know. Like, really, the only sport that you could convince me would be okay to expand beyond 32 is the NFL.
Yeah.
Like, I think baseball should have fewer teams than they currently do. I'd be for basketball having fewer teams than they currently do. So, look, I mean, if their numbers say it works and they have the financials in order, then sure. But it feels hard for me to believe that their game would be as good as it is now with adding two or three more teams into the mix.
Yeah, their perspective is just like a little bit different than everyone else because they're not worried about necessarily like the quality of play with it.
My biggest part of my objection. Yeah. It's just like you spread the talent pool too thin.
Yeah, like where the NHL, they just want their league to reflect more of what the NFL and the NBA and the Major League Baseball represent, which is having 30 markets covered in the United States of America. That's why they're going to keep expanding. It's because they've got so many teams in Canada that they want to have 30 markets covered.
Just move the teams from Canada. Problem solved.
I mean, they haven't won a championship since before
30 years.
So, or I guess it was. Yeah, I guess I was.
No, yeah, because I think it was 94.
Yeah, so I guess I was.
You were born. Yeah,
I was too. So, I mean, congrats, Canada.
But it's been a long time.
It's been a long time. No, I'm with you. Like, obviously, that's never going to happen. But like, but that's their whole perspective on this. Is like, they just want to be in more U.S. markets. And specifically, like, Houston makes a lot of sense. It's a top five market. I think it would support a team pretty easily. I think the holdup is just, like, does Tillman want to own a team? Or does he want someone to rent Toyota Center from him? Because it's obviously more profitable if they're just renting Toyota Center. They're not going to build a stadium for a hockey team.
No, there's no chance.
Like, that's not happening. They're not going to go out to Sugar Land and put a hockey stadium, like, or the Woodlands. Like, it's like, that's not happening.
Bring it to Kingwood. I would go. This is, I think, going to be a hot take that you're going to disagree with, but I'll give it to you anyway. You mentioned Austin, I think, was the fifth city on this list. I kind of think, don't shoot me, I kind of think Austin's more viable than Houston because there's less. Look, I know it's a college town, so the number one interest is the Longhorns there, But I like the idea of putting an expansion team like this in a city that doesn't have a pro team, to where all of the interest and dollars that would go towards a pro team goes to one team and not spread out as it would be in Houston amongst three plus the Dynamo plus now a hockey team.
I don't hate that take. I think it's interesting because like that's kind of what happened in Vegas. It's like they had the Aces.
Yeah. Right?
But
yeah,
that's it. Like they only had a WNBA team when they got the Golden Knights. And now they went to the championship. They went to the Cup their first year. So like that helped them out a lot, obviously with like the intrigue. But it's still the hottest ticket in town, even though the Raiders are there. Because the Raiders people mostly are selling their tickets to opposing fans. We're like the Golden Knights are actually just Knights fans at this point. I would be intrigued.
Because there's no way both Austin and Houston get one.
No.
Selfishly, I'd want it to be Houston because I'd like to have my my interest in hockey peaked again. But like I could see an argument, and I actually agree with it, that Austin might be a more viable market because there's just really not the same level competition. You also have, you know, it's kind of a booming Silicon Valley, so there's lots of money there. It's also a city. I'm losing the term now as I'm thinking about it, but it's a transplant city. There's like Houston, it's a transplant city, so you'd have people from hockey markets that have moved there that would support a local hockey team. I think it makes a lot of sense.
I find that argument interesting, and we'll hit the Goodell stuff in the next segment because, like, I do think like a new team, a transplant would be more likely to jump on. When like I feel like when you move here, like the hockey interest kind of goes away.
Like, well, did it for you?
Yeah, it did for me. Because like there used to be the Maple Leaf Pub, which I'm pretty sure is closed now. But like there's not really like a great place to like watch hockey, I think, consistently. So like I still watch. Like because it's like I guess it's because of what we do. Like I don't have time to watch the Blackhawks because we're never gonna talk hockey on this show unless they actually get a team. So like that's kind of pulled my interest away a little bit. But like it would be like interesting to like be like to jump on to like a new team as a transplant because it's like it feels different than like when people like even when I think about like the Astros and the Texans and the Rockets, like it's a brand new team. Like it's like something that like I've been here for 11 years.
Yeah, you'd be on the ground level.
Yeah. So like I'd be interested. Like it'd always be the Blackhawks first still when they played, but like I think I'd be very into it.
Honestly. Do you think, okay. And maybe this is my own jaded feelings about, and look, born and raised here, love this city, but this is my own jaded feelings about our fan base here in Houston, moving my opinion one direction. But like we've seen in years where like Texans aren't good, like the Astros when they had their 100 loss seasons, Rockets when they're not, you know, like during the Steven Silas era, or frankly just the first quarter of any game, even when they are good, like attendance can be kind of a problem here. Like I do wonder how much, like the you mentioned the Golden Knights in Vegas a few minutes ago. They won right away at a big level. Like I think if that were to happen with the Houston hockey team, if they were to get one, then that helps the kind of that transition and build a fan base. But I'd have a fear that they come here, they're not good right away, and the kind of the way this fan base I want to stop short of calling it fair weather, but it's kind of fair weather adjacent to where I would worry about the support for a hockey team if they're not winning right away.
No, I agree. It's why I was very against the idea of the Coyotes coming here because I was like a bad team,
right?
And like we're like at least in like an expansion team, like everyone gets it here. I think that actually helps.
It buys you a few years.
Like it buys you a few years, but because it's so different in hockey, of how many players are protected. Like, the Seattle Kraken, at this point, are one of the last teams in the playoffs. Like, they're still a new, you know, a young team. They're like three or four years old.
Yeah.
At this point, so, like, they handle, like, their expansion draft so differently that, like, you can be competitive literally from day one. A lot of the other teams don't like that. But, like, that helps. But, yeah, if they came here and they were terrible, like, it's not like it's that's where it's different between football and hockey, though. Like, everyone kind of got what the Texans were going to be when they first started here, that it was going to take some time to build a team, and they stuck through it, and what, they didn't make the playoffs for, what was it, 9 years?
They debuted in 2002, made it in 11, so that's, that's so, 10 years.
So, like, people got it, like, at the same time, and, like, we're supportive, but, like, hockey, I do have concerns that, like, if you don't win right away, like, I think Tillman or the owner of said team would be aware of that. Like, you have to be aggressive with this team. Like, and we'll see. Like, it's going to be interesting. Speaking of hockey, I'll just get a quick plug here. Next Thursday, we're going to be out at McIntyre's in Webster. We'll be out there watching Team USA play. The game starts at 2:10, so we'll be obviously doing our show from 3 to 6. We're doing a deal with Yuengling. They're doing a flyaway promotion to where you'll actually be able to register multiple times throughout the month and through March or into March, a chance to go see a Stars game in Philadelphia. Everything's included. So we'll be out at McIntyre's next Thursday from 3 to 6 doing that as well. So we'll be talking about that throughout the next week. But let's talk about this Roger Goodell rule stuff, because my first reaction to when I heard that the booth was going to be able to start calling in penalties was, this is an absolutely terrible, terrible idea. We'll get to that next year on Jeremy and Joe, No Jeremy, on ESPN 97.5. Since 1976, D&M Leasing has been in business and helping people get into new and used lease vehicles. Their mission is simple. They want to make getting a vehicle easier, smarter, and more affordable than buying it the old-fashioned way. They're tired of that negative equity, tired of wasting weekends at dealership, and tired of watching you pay too much for too little. So if you're dealing with negative equity, you just want a smarter way to upgrade your car and your payments are too high, call D&M right now at 713-290-1000 or go to dmautoleasing.com today. You can get no payments for the next 60 days. And if you've never leased a vehicle before, don't worry. You'll be working with someone that's been there for, on average, about 10 years. This is what their average salesperson has been there for. So they will help you through the entire process from start to finish. And when it comes time, they will even bring that new or used lease vehicle right to you. Check them out right now at 713-290-1000 or dmautoleasing.com and tell them ESPN 97.5 sent you by.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Listening to Jeremy and Joe
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
All right, Joe George, Brian McDonald here with you till 5:30. We're just talking about the NHL player saying Houston was the number one option for if they expand, or I guess just relocate a team too, could still be on the table at this point for a city, a city they like to see a team move to. But Roger Goodell met with the media, as he always does, which, honestly, Brian, like, one of my favorite things is just, like, which disaster is going to happen, like, right before he meets with all of the media the one time a year. This year it was owners being named in the Epstein files.
We got, was it two? Yeah. The Giants co-owner and the, who, I forget the other one.
Yeah, there was
the 76ers, a different sport, but the 76ers owner was named in it.
Yeah.
Forgetting who else.
You've got, like, right before he meets with the media, reportedly a forced sale of what is looking to be like $7 to $8 billion of one of the teams playing in the Super Bowl could be happening starting after the Super Bowl for the Seattle Seahawks.
I can't think of a time that we've ever seen a team in the Super Bowl also being currently for sale.
Yeah.
And I can't remember that ever happening.
No, and then apparently they were fined $5 million for not...
The Seahawks?
Like, yeah, that's what was reported, because... So, like, the owner died, and, like, in his, like, will and everything, like, it was like, this team has to be sold, and the NFL was like, hey, you're not doing it. So they fined them apparently $5 million for it. The closest thing would be Boston. I mean, they sold right after they won the championship.
True.
But that was like intentional.
That
wasn't like this where, so yeah, so Roger Goodell always has like some kind of like, you know, fire he has to put out, it seems like, ironically, like right as he's about to meet with everyone. But one of the things he brought up that I thought was interesting, besides like the nonsense about, you know, all the international games next year and how they're going to keep going and keep
expanding again.
Keeps going, man. They're going to Spain next year. They're going back to Mexico next year.
France.
Like, it's too much. It's not slowing down.
Yeah, Spain, London.
Yeah, it's so much. But he mentioned that, you know, in replay review, that, like, that they might allow the booth to throw penalty flags.
I don't know why you don't like this. Because, like, we've already seen this happen in the NBA. Do you not like it in the NBA?
My concern is not really. Like, because the way he, like, the way he says it, the way he said it, like, gives me this feeling that, like, we're talking about a touchdown and it's going to be ruled pass interference, like, of some kind. Like, that, like, that's my concern, is that, like, it's, we're going to, they're going to overdo it. Because I feel like the
NFL, that would be an automatic review, because maybe we, there's some clarification that needs to happen here. Because I took the quote as, like, a coach's challenge. Because, like, a touchdown or a turnover would have the automatic review, but I didn't take him saying that this would be a part of that.
Yeah, the only thing, like, I want, like, the booth to be involved with at this point for me is I think they should be involved with roughing the quarterback.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's the only rule that, like, I'm open to.
I would also throw, like, face mask into that.
Oh, yeah.
Like things that are clear and obvious. Like, I don't really want the gray area stuff. Like,
that's
pass
concern.
Interference, holding. Yes. But if it's something that's black and white, like, there's not really, if it's a rule that doesn't really depend upon an opinion, then I'm all for adding these in if they see these in a challenge.
And that's where, like, and even if there's not in a challenge, like, I would have been fine if they were just like, hey, if there's a clear and obvious face mask and the ball is not
been snapped.
Why does
a replay assist help with that? Like, I guess there's a limitation to that.
Yeah.
But it feels like something that should be so easy. Like you said, if the ball has, like, because we're not doing this five plays later, obviously. But if the ball hasn't been snapped and replay assist sees, oh, well, he obviously grabbed the face mask, which we see, it seems like we see that, like, every third game in the NFL. Then I don't know why they can't just they can't buzz down and tell the referees, hey, stop the play. Or stop it from the next play from happening and put this penalty in.
Yeah, that'd be fine with me. It's my concern is honestly is the ticky tack stuff. Is that, like, we're reviewing
pass interference?
Yeah, it's like we're reviewing if the spot of a ball, and all of a sudden there was defensive holding on this play, so it's an automatic first down anyways, plus 10 yards, which, like, the referees on the field didn't catch. Like, things that are kind of up for interpretation, where, you know, we hear people say all the time there's holding on every single play in the NFL. It's like, when does the booth then have the right to come in when they are all aware there's holding on every single play to say that's egregious, I'm going to throw the flag now for holding? Like, if it's clear and obvious, you know, hits to the head, face mask penalty. We haven't seen. We've only seen.
Maybe you could throw in horse collar into that as well.
Horse collar. We only saw. I think I saw. It was only two hip drop tackle penalties were thrown this year. A bunch more fines, but only two penalties were thrown. Like, things like that, like, might be harder to see in real time, but are actually, like, pretty clear. And, like, this is the rule, yes or no, as you said, black or white. I'm fine with that. My concern is, like, I think back to, like, how we were handling, like, when they did the offensive pass interference challenge. And how it's just like it was too much too quick, and then they had to get rid of it. We're like, I think this can be a positive for the NFL, but I'm just concerned that it could be overdone to where that it only lasts for a year and we don't get the actual positive parts of it.
Yeah, I think the success of this really, I think, is going to be correlated to how they format it, right? Because I'm with you. Like, if this gets to a point where everything under the sun is up for review anytime they challenge, and they're looking at all 22 players on the field, like, all right, did the left tackle hold? Did the left guard hold? Did the center hold? Like, not only would that, I think, be a step too far, it also make the replays take forever.
Yes.
If they're trying to look for everything amongst all 22 players on the field. So I think if they limit this to, we happen to notice a roughing the passer, we happen to notice a face mask, something like this, that's no gray area, that's not, you know, open to interpretation like pass interference, then I think it's fine if they just happen to notice it and they're not, like, looking for everything under the sun.
Yeah, as long and like, something you mentioned in there a little bit was just, and, like, was the pace. Like, no matter what's being done here, like, just keep the pace going. Like, don't slow. That's like when people were, like, were first heard about the challenges coming in baseball with the ball and strike challenges and things like that, even in the minor leagues where you can challenge, you know, like the check swing and everything like that. It's happening so fast that it's not changing anything for the game. So as long as they can keep the pace going in the NFL for any of it, like, I guess I'm more open to it. It's just when I hear it, I'm just like, ugh, I feel like we're going to have ticky-tack penalties being called out of nowhere, and the game's going to slow down dramatically. So, like, if that doesn't happen, I can be more open to it, but I'm hesitant to think that they'll get this right from the jump.
Yeah, that's fair. Like, if what it becomes is they're like I think you mentioned spot of the ball. Like if what they're looking at is, oh, did they get the first down or not? And all of a sudden we come back and it's, oh, well, there was holding on the play. Like, okay, like let's, I especially if it's something like holding where, look, I would also throw illegal contact downfield. Like, I throw that into the mix as well. Like, it feels like those two could happen on every single play that you look at. So I'd be against if it's something like that that's not, you know, in relation to what they're actually reviewing. But if it's just black and white easy stuff that they happen to notice, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, like 3785 says the no call on the Stafford face mask kind of change that Seahawks-Rams game. Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that's totally fine. There was one the week before in the Rams-Bears game that was, like, clear as day face mask on the Rams that they didn't call. Like, that stuff is – first of all, they missed a lot of face mask penalties. On a side note, it feels like this year.
I have noticed, like, more of that, yeah.
Yeah, like, and maybe it's just, like, they're so egregious when they happen, it feels bigger than it is. But, like, that stuff's fine. I just, like, I don't want the balls on the right side of the field. The play is essentially like it's no big deal, and they're calling something on the other side of the field that did not impact the play whatsoever. They're then correcting that mistake. It just feels like there's going to be a line that they have to be just – they got to dance around like how far –
I think they just have to define what penalties are allowed to be flagged after the fact.
100%. All right, let's get to the Wheel of Bits. We'll do that next. You never know what's coming on the Wheel of Bits. That's next year on Jeremy and Joe on ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.